You're listening to the Option Alpha podcast from OptionAlpha.com, where we show you how to make smarter trades, learn how the stock market really works, and generate consistent monthly income. Now, your host and head trader at OptionAlpha.com, Kirk Duplessis.
Hey everyone, this is Kirk here again at OptionAlpha.com, working every single week to make this the most popular investing podcast offered online because it's based on one thing and one thing only, and that's helping you guys make smarter trades. So again, thank you so much for tuning in to today. On today's show, episode number 170, we're going to go through the five critical factors for any trading strategy. And this, I think, will be really, really important as you get started with the new year. So we're recording this at the end of the year, 2019, and as we come up on a new year, new decade, what's really important is just kind of revisit your trading strategy. In my opinion, I think these five critical factors will help lead you to figuring out which strategies, which techniques you're going to use moving forward, and more importantly, which ones you're going to double down on. Because when you look at options trading and the opportunity in options trading, I think you will realize after going through these five things that options trading gives you the most flexibility and the most power to move forward with your portfolio in 2020 and beyond. Now, one quick side note and housekeeping item. If you haven't noticed already, we did actually take a little bit of a break on the Daily Call podcast. We are not stopping the Daily Call podcast. I know I actually had a lot of people who emailed me and said, Kirk, like, where did it go? I refreshed, I unsubscribed, and then I resubscribed again. The Daily podcast is not stopping. What we are doing, though, is we are changing up the format a little bit in 2020. So what we have done is we've taken a little bit of a pause, a little bit of a break here as we kind of reshuffle the team, reshuffle our ideas around this. We've reached now episode number 800 on the Daily Call podcast. So we've covered a lot of ground, but we want to take things up another level and do something even better in the next series of episodes. So you guys will be seeing that from us very soon. So stay subscribed to the Daily Call podcast as well as this podcast. We are going to be changing things up for the better. I think you guys will really enjoy what we have coming. All right, so let's get into the five critical factors for any trading strategy. Just food for thought, though, these actually are not things that I created. These came out of the book, The Complete Guide to Factor-Based Investing by Birkin and Seward, or Sue Rowe, if I say it that right. It was a really, really good book that you can pick up. You know, for me, I think that honestly, the book was more geared towards a stock investor than an options trading investor. But right in the introduction, kind of in the first, you know, 30 or 40 pages, what they really harped on is this idea of factor-based investing and the idea around having critical factors that you can rely on. I would call this like decision data-based investing. So not investing based on any type of emotional bias or hunches or opinions, but more of factual-based, data-based investing. And this is where I think options trading and specifically what we've done here at Option Alpha for the last number of years has really been very well received. People like the idea of investing around frameworks for factors and decisions and data versus the alternative. And so when you start pulling this all together, one thing that you have to keep in mind is you start seeing more information out there, because I think that's the risk to you, is you see so much information. It's trying to figure out what things are viable, what strategies are viable, what's actually believable that you can use and rely on. This to me is, I think, the framework that you should use, and for sure will be one of the foundational elements of how we kind of redo things with the new courses coming up in 2020. So I want to go through these with you so that you have an idea of them. And I want you to critically think about them as we go through them. Think about how you are investing now. It doesn't necessarily have to be if you're investing in options or not, but if you're doing any type of investing, how could these apply to you as an investor? And that's where I think you're going to get the most value out of this podcast. As always, if you want to get the show notes that go over all these as we're going through them, you can just head on over to optionalpha.com/show170. Again, that's just the number 170. optionalpha.com/show170. All right. So the first factor that you have to have is that whatever factor you are using has to be persistent. And persistent meaning that it holds across a lot of different time periods and a lot of different regimes in the market. And so when I look at options trading, because I'm going to focus on that obviously on this podcast, the ability for an options trader to generate income using option selling strategies in particular is very persistent. It's been very much a proven strategy to generate the implied volatility risk premium, or capture the implied volatility risk premium across many different market environments, across many different market regimes, if you will. And that has been proven not only by us, but also by other people. So you can look at outside research, AQR, CBOE, everybody else. It's been proven that capturing implied volatility risk premium the edge that goes to an option seller for selling premium and taking on the risk that an option buyer doesn't want to take on is profitable. And it's profitable over a long period of time. That doesn't mean it's profitable over a single trade entry or a single series of trade entries in a couple months. It's profitable over the long stretch of time. High, low, high volatility, low volatility, all still remain profitable. So I think that checks the box for sure in the persistent category. Number two of the five critical factors is pervasive. Pervasive is interesting because what works in one place doesn't necessarily mean it will work in another place. And so what we often see is that people come in, they say, yeah, but options trading works in the US markets, but that doesn't mean it's going to work in other markets. Now, discounting any market dynamics with fundamentals of the market, the exchanges, the government factors, when you look at trading options on US companies or US indices versus foreign indices, commodities, volatility products, emerging markets, it is still profitable. And so for me, the pervasiveness of a strategy means that it has to hold across different sectors and asset classes. Again, what we see with options trading, in particular premium selling, generally through option selling, is that it works. It's pervasive across bonds, across US markets, across emerging markets, across oil and commodities and tech and this and that. And that to me means that it's got a wide range of different asset classes from which you can move in and out of. Again, I don't know what other investing vehicle you can do that where you can quickly, almost in an instant, in the snap of a finger, move your entire portfolio from one asset class to another asset class and have a reasonable level of confidence that it still will generally create a profitable outcome. And so to me, that's really, really powerful. Number three of our five critical factors is that it's got to be robust. And robust means that it holds for various definitions. So what that means is that we can generate money various different ways with options trading. That to me is literally one of the coolest parts about options trading, is that you can mold and create whatever strategy you want to use. Options trading is not one directional. So with stock trading, the only way, or I think that's the way that most people are used to it, is you buy stock low and you sell it higher. It's a one-way street. You only can travel down that one-way street, right? Now we know that you can short sell stock, but discounting that, let's say there's two ways that you can make money with options or with stocks. You can buy it and it goes up, you can sell it and it goes down and take the opposite end. With options trading, you can literally create whatever payoff diagram you want. Want to create an option strategy where you profit if the stock makes a large move in one direction? Great, you can do that. Do you want to create a strategy where the stock can move up by 5% and then stays in that range at a higher level? Great, you can create a strategy that does that. Literally, it is up to you how creative you can be with your option strategies, and then therefore creating different strategies inside of a portfolio with different components and ETFs and stocks that you're trading. You can create whatever you want. You can literally bend and mold your portfolio to fit whatever outlook and expectations you have for the market are moving forward. You cannot get that in a regular stock portfolio. You just literally can't get that. That's not even including the fact that with options trading, you can create defined risk, defined profit outcomes. That does not happen with a regular stock portfolio. You can only get that once you start introducing an option strategy on top of a regular equity, long or short equity position. You literally cannot get defined risk, defined profit until you've crossed the threshold to say, yes, I want to start trading options. All right, so number four of the five critical factors is it's got to be investable. And this one, I think, even say 5 or 10 years ago, was a really hard barrier to kind of cross through. And because investable means that after including transaction costs and implementation issues and actually access to the trading strategy or the investing product or vehicle, that it actually makes sense. Now, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the trading costs were enormous. 5 years ago, even a year ago, the trading costs were outrageous in some cases for many traders. But now that threshold has been brought effectively towards zero. And I've said this again and again, and I'll continue to say it, but trading costs are going to go all the way to zero. Right now, for many places, it's 65 cents. That's where all the contracts and all the brokers are, except for things like Robinhood and other ones. But it's all going to go to zero. The next major quantum leap in the investing world for options trading is going to be breaking down geography barriers, breaking down the borders between countries so that we have a truly global market for traders. Because I know all of our listeners right now, I understand, I hear you guys, I get the emails, people who are still in are in Australia or in a different country in Europe or in South Africa or in, you know, Asia or the Middle East or whatever, you guys are still trading and have enormous costs of commissions and fees. That barrier is going to be broken down. But the idea is that in many respects, for most people that are trading options right now, the investability of options has never been easier. The access to markets, the commissions, the platforms, the speed, the technology, you can do on your phone what you could not do 10 years ago. And that is pretty incredible. And I think that, you know, as we start to move forward in the next 10 years, we're going to start to see all this really, really accelerate at a faster pace. So if you don't feel like you've caught up now, you're going to start feeling more and more left behind with all the opportunities that there are for investing in particular trading options, literally from your hand. With your thumb, you can do more now than you ever could do 10 years ago with your computer and your mouse and all of your computer storage and RAM, et cetera. The last one, number five of our five critical factors, is that it's got to be intuitive. And so if you actually think about one through four, up until this point, it's all been pretty simple stuff. But the last one has to make sense. And I love this intuitive factor that they included in their research. And the intuitiveness is basically this idea that it's got to make logical sense why there is a trade-off between risk and reward, between behavior of one party, the option buyer, and the behavior of the other person, the option seller. And I think this is very intuitive when you think about what option selling is. Option selling and options trading is just literally a transfer of risk. And if you think about it in those simple terms, then all of it makes, you know, complete sense. You're transferring risk between one person and another person in exchange for premium and the transfer of risk. And those activities are universal. We do that all the time. We transfer risk when we buy auto insurance. We transfer risk when we buy a casino or lottery ticket. Like, you do that all the time. You just don't even think about it, right? The exchange of value and the transfer of risk is something that everyone does automatically. And therefore, it's a very logical-based, intuitive reason why options trading will continue to exist moving forward in the future. I often get the question, Kirk, what is the world going to look like when machines have taken over, when AI is running everything, when all these algorithms are trading every strategy that we have, when it's all automated? How does that actually still derive a profitable implied volatility edge? And my answer is always the same, that I don't think the edge will ever disappear until the point at which we can accurately and correctly predict both the future price and the path of the future price. Until we get to that point where we can accurately predict the future in every way, shape, and form, we are always going to overshoot and undershoot expectations. It's a natural process. So if in the future we can accurately predict that Apple stock is going to move from A to B and we know the exact path of that movement over time, okay, then this all disappears. But until we get to that point, which I don't think we'll ever get to that point, until we get to that point, then all of the things that I'm saying still hold true. The idea that we will overshoot expectations. We will believe that something is going to be worse or better than it actually is. We will believe that markets are going to be calm and they become volatile. And that continuous black swan event, that unknown future, fuels this implied volatility risk premium, this premium that people are willing to pay in order to transfer risk away from themselves. And so that's why I think this is so pervasive and it's so intuitive, because it's naturally what we've done already for hundreds of years as humans. We do this all the time in many different shapes and forms and business ventures, et cetera. We do this all the time. Transfer risk in exchange for premium or value or barter or whatever the case is. So hopefully you guys have really enjoyed this. Again, it's a great opportunity now to start the new year to reflect on how you've incorporated these or not, or how you've thought about these or not in your trading strategy moving forward. Because if you are going to start to rebuild your portfolio or reposition your portfolio moving forward, asking these questions: is my strategy persistent? Is it pervasive? Is it robust? Is it investable? Is it intuitive? And start working towards things that check all of these boxes, I think is critical for you moving forward. The markets are going to move faster and faster and faster. 2019 was a relatively calm year. We are not going to have that type of year over and over again. And I think that as we move forward in the future and things become more volatile, as they will inevitably become, you're going to need to understand why you are in the strategies that you're in, why you built the portfolio the way you did. And this serves as the bedrock, the foundation for that, making sure that all of the things that you're doing check these five boxes. So again, you can get all these by heading over to the show notes page at optionalpha.com/show170. Again, that's just the number 170. And you can get a list of all these and download them. As always, if you guys have comments or feedback, let me know on the show notes page or wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. And let me know what feedback you have. We'll definitely be able to jump in and chime in and make sure that we're answering your questions as we keep going. Before we get into the trader Q&A segment, as I've done for the last couple episodes, and I will continue to do in the future, I did want to just give a quick shout out and thank you to one of our members in the community who left us a review, and they basically left a really nice review. I can't even say their name, so I'll just spell it, but their review was amazing, and their name was Q-U-I-Q-U-E-V-G. They left it on iTunes, and he said, "I've listened to number 55 podcasts, and I can't believe how much I've learned. When I first started listening about options, it was like listening to a Chinese language, and now it all seems so clear." So thank you so much, Kirk, for sharing your knowledge in an amazing way. So I really appreciate that. Look, I very much appreciate you guys spending the time to write the review. I know it takes just like 2 minutes of your time, but literally this is how we grow here at Option Alpha, is through word of mouth, through feedback from you guys. So if you like this, if you found something new, if you want to leave another review and you've already left a review, I think you can do that on a different podcast channel or a different station. Leave us a review wherever you listen to the podcast. We would really appreciate it. All right, so let's get into the closing bell segment now and answer a question from Dan.
And now our favorite part of the show, Trader Q&A, where we ask a question from one of our current members about options trading. Got a question you'd like to ask Kirk to answer live on the air? Just head on over to optionalpha.com/ask and hit the record button to leave a message. That's optionalpha.com/ask. And now, here's today's question.
Hi, Kirk. This is Dan Pierce from Pomona area, California. Thank you so much for all your statistical and analytical skills and applying them to help us. That's the kind of stuff that works, not opinions, not hocus pocus. I have a question about choosing options. One of the other websites on options said that we should try to choose options with less than a 10% spread. And I'd like you to compare this to implied volatility to volume. And I'm sure they're all related. Which one is the better one to look at, or do you need to look at all three or just two of those? Thanks.
All right, so Dan, thank you so much for asking this question. I think it's a very common question that people have, just trying to figure out the relationship between spread, implied volatility, volume, which one's most important, are they all important? I think the simple answer here is that you should look at all of them and analyze all of them. I don't necessarily think one or the other is most important. When you start going down that path where you say spread is the most important thing, then we could easily build a case where you have a very tight spread in a security, but almost no volume, no implied volatility edge, no liquidity elsewhere, except for that one contract that has a really tight spread. So I hate to use absolutes in anything with trading, except for maybe like, you know, no position size over 5%, or you have to be net sellers. But really the idea with spread and implied volatility and volume is you should look at them in totality together. What kind of picture are they building for the trading strategy? So using that analogy, let me paint you a picture. You're looking at a trade right now, and for doesn't matter what the ticker symbol is, and it's got a really tight spread, but implied volatility is super low, and there's only a couple contracts that have been traded today. Maybe there have been more contracts traded before, and just because of the price of the security, the spread is really, really low. So it's a very small spread, which is important, but is that the type of security that you want to be, you know, swimming in? So I think about them in pools. Do I want to be this big, big, big fish coming into a potentially very small swimming pool, or do I want to be in the wide open ocean of liquidity in a very large product that has a lot more activity, a lot more depth? And so where you might find a really, really great opportunity in spread, the other ones might not be as great. Now let's paint a different picture. You're looking at a different option security, you're looking at a different trade, and the spread is not as tight. It's still pretty tight compared to other things, but it's not as tight as you would want it to be. But implied volatility is really high and there's abundant liquidity. So volume is really high, open interest is really high. It means that the markets are not only deep, but they're active. You can quickly get in and out. Does that overshadow the fact that there's maybe a little bit wider spread than you would want? And I would argue yes. I would say that in a liquid market like that, I would try a price that would hopefully narrow that spread and kind of come somewhere in between, or maybe even a little bit favorable in pricing. And I know that because markets are liquid, I can work that price and maybe see if there's a buyer or seller on the other end pretty quickly. So in that type of environment, I think that while spread is not necessarily ideal because of implied volatility and volume and liquidity, I think that that overshadows the need for just focusing on spread. So I understand the idea behind keeping spreads low. I totally agree with it. I think we should trade liquid products. I think by default, if you trade liquid and active products, the spreads will generally be low. But I do not subscribe to the idea that spread is the only thing. I think you have to look at them in totality. The other thing you have to look at is what fits your portfolio best. You know, I talk to people all the time about this, but this idea that if we just look at one factor and say, okay, we're just going to focus on spread and only trade the things that have the best spread right now. Well, what if the 10 best things that have the best spread right now end up being all technology related companies? What if they were all social media stocks? What if they were all gold mining stocks? Does that mean that you should trade those 10 things because they all have the best spread? Well, no, you would be highly concentrated in your portfolio. You would probably assume more risk than you would think you would have assumed otherwise because of your concentration. So just using that one factor, I think, pigeonholes you into building things that you might not have done intuitively if you took a step back and said, okay, does this fit well in the whole portfolio? So hopefully I helped answer your question. As always, if you guys have any other questions, you can just submit them into the show by going to optionalpha.com/answer and clicking on the red button in the middle of the screen, just like Dan did, and leave me a private voicemail. Like I've said a number of times, there's no software to download or install. It's very easy. You guys can do it right now on your phones if you want to. Again, just head on over to optionalpha.com/ask and leave me a private voicemail and get your show question answered in the next podcast. All right, so let's get into the closing bell segment and discuss a trade that we're making right now in EEM.
Now, the closing bell. Find out which stocks we're looking at right now, trades we're making, and hear our game plan moving forward.
All right, so new trade today in EEM that we're making, and we're actually starting the process of continuing to trade contracts out into February expiration of 2020. It's actually really interesting because EEM is one of those stocks that has literally been all over the place in the last month and a half. You look at the stock chart of EEM and you can see that in the last month and a half, it's gone from about 42 up to 44, crashed back down to 42, and then now up and beyond 44 to 45. So it's really interesting to see where this thing has been and its trajectory. It's a very volatile security tracking emerging markets, and it's going to remain volatile in the future. As a result, though, I think that we've seen a little bit of an uptick in implied volatility, which is trying to counteract for this as people start buying options at a more aggressive pace. In either case, we are going to maintain the same process that we use generally, which is to start the process of selling February contracts a new expiration month with neutral balance positions. In the case of EEM, the stock today is trading between 44 and 45. It's almost trading exactly at 44 and a half. So we're going to sell a very tight iron condor. So almost an iron butterfly. An iron butterfly would be selling the same short strike, but we're going to sell the 45 call and the 44 put. Since the stock is in the middle of the range, we're going to be as neutral as possible on this. And then we're going to go out on either end and buy very cheap protection on the call side at 48 and on the put side at 44. So this gives us a net credit of $1.46. About a 63-65% probability of success on this trade. And we'll only do four contracts, keep the position size pretty small. This is our first entry into this ticker for February expiration. It is a core ticker for us. So it's one that we want to continuously trade over and over and over again. But that doesn't mean that we should just blow all of our allocation to it right now. So we did a small position size, a little less than a percent. So we'll do another couple laddered entries as EEM starts to move and starts to get closer to February expiration and start to spread this position out if EEM does move, which I assume it would because the last month or so, this thing's been all over the map. So we want to give ourselves time to add laddered entries and kind of move and ebb and flow with the market as it continues to evolve.
Thanks for listening to the Option Alpha podcast. If you liked what you heard, please drop by iTunes and leave a rating or comment. Plus, you can get everything. Free email updates for future shows, transcripts, video tutorials, case studies, and more. Just visit our website at optionalpha.com.
All right, so I truly hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and as always, got at least one thing out of it that you can apply right now to make you smarter, more profitable trader and investor. You can get additional resources, any links mentioned in the show, and some related video training from today's show by going to optionalpha.com/show170. Again, that's just the number 170, optionalpha.com/show170. And until next time, happy trading.